The BMC Amy Z Talk and Coffeeware Modern Mainframe Podcasts have joined forces. You can find your favorite episodes from both podcasts, as well as new insight and discussion at soundcloud.com/modernmainframe.
Great episode of the BMC Amy Z Talk podcast. I'm your host, Jill Perez, and today I'm happy to have back with me Grant McDonald, Marketing Director for BMC Amy Security Solutions, and Chad Rickensrud, Director of Security Consulting Services here at BMC. In our last episode with Grant and Chad, we debunked the myth that the mainframe can't be hacked and shared strategies to better safeguard it. So today we're going to go through a postmortem of a mainframe hack to discuss what happens if you don't. So Grant, with that, I will let you get started.
Thanks, Jill, and welcome back. Those that had listened to the last podcast, if you missed it, I encourage you to check it out. We talked with Chad a little bit about his history with performing penetration tests and how he moved over to focusing on the mainframe in his career and kind of seeing the security risks there. And this time we're going to talk a little bit more about the sort of things that he's experienced in the real world. So Chad, I know obviously you can't give out any names. We, you know, have to, you know, protect the names of the, those involved here, but what are the couple, you know, one or two more interesting cases maybe that you can think of where, something, you noticed when you were performing a penetration test that kind of surprised you?
Hey Grant. Well, thanks for having me back. I'll tell you two things that surprise me continuously when I'm out looking at client sites. And, you know, just for the listeners to remind them, like these are some of the biggest, most complex organizations on earth, right? I mean, these are the biggest financial institutions or government or healthcare companies or retail companies or airlines, whatever. I mean, and so when I talk about this kind of stuff, what kind of adds an exclamation point or some gravity behind it is just what's at stake with these systems. Because like I said last time, and I usually say this on, you know, every time I give a presentation, is if you're running a mainframe, you're probably doing something important with it, right? In or put it another way, if it isn't working correctly or if it gets compromised, your business isn't doing business, really isn't operating in any kind of meaningful way. And so two things that I, and they're big things, but kind of broad level things that I see that are just generally shocking. One is just the basics. We can talk about this later. I've talked about this in a lot of other different podcasts and presentations and talks and stuff, but there are so many basics on the system with respect to security that just don't get done. I mean, for people out there that are mainframe fluid, things like having update access to APF authorized libraries, or things like, you know, the number of people that have elevated privileges on their own IDs that still exist, or the number of network connections that require no authentication, whether it be anonymous FTP or JES that doesn't require any, like network job entry that doesn't require any usernames, passwords, or keys or anything like that. Those things still exist in the wild, and they're kind of shocking because all of that tells me that the folks sitting behind those systems are really relying on their perimeter security and the hope that none of their internal users that have access to the system over the network are ever compromised. And so that's number one. I just mentioned a couple of them, but there are many of those that fall into that sort of basics bucket before we even get to things like number two, which is just kind of shocking to me, is the number of times we find bona fide backdoors on the system, right? This is something that on any other platform anywhere else would be just unheard of or crazy. I remember, it's been several years now, but I remember there were a couple of routing and switch companies that I won't mention by name, but they found backdoors in the code that looked like they had been there for years and don't really know where those came from. You know, there's always speculation about government actors or, you know, foreign actors, that kind of stuff. But what we have found while doing assessments of client systems are everything from software vendors that have intentionally put back doors on systems so that they can better support them, meaning that they can come in if they get access to your system, they can give themselves whatever permissions they need without having to ask you, which is just absolutely crazy. I mean, it'd be like someone installing an alarm system in your house and making sure that they had access to disarm it at any point in time, even if the alarm went off or whatever. So that's kind of bananas. I actually did a talk about one of the more egregious ones that I've ever found. And the other part of it is we see, sometimes we see users of the systems, who probably had their, privileges taken away through some, enterprise initiative where they're removing privileges from people's daily driver's ID, which is the right thing to do. And they sort of, you know, kind of take that not lying down, kicking and screaming. And as a result, they add themselves a little magic backdoor, a little magic system call or supervisor call or program call that lets them basically, you know, escalate their own privileges if they need to. And I tend to think people do this with, if there is sort of good intentions, but it's terribly short-sighted. If I can find this in a pen test where I've been looking at the system for a couple of hours, then, you know, a bad person who's working on your network that has a lot of time is certainly going to be able to find it as well.
Gotcha. And most of these incidents, do you think there was something that there should have been an alarm sounded for somebody that they just didn't notice, or do you think they were just completely unaware that this kind of thing was happening?
I think up until very recently, in mainframe terms, right? Because we talk about the history of Z, we're talking about 50, 60 years, right? So up until very recently, in the last few years, there hasn't really been a good way to find these things that was commercially available. Now there's a couple of products out there that can help you find these things, maybe, right? Some of them not as much, but you know, so I think that they didn't, to answer your question, I think that there wasn't any way of sort of proactively finding these things or even after the fact without looking at it. And generally speaking, you know, you have to trust the systems programmers or the security folks. They have the keys to the kingdom, and there's very few people in the enterprise with the knowledge to check it, right? That would know how to check what they've done or what they're doing. And if your system's not locked down to begin with, it's pretty easy to install what we call in pen testing some type of persistence, which is just a fancy way of saying a back door that lets you get back onto the system or lets you get back to, you know, escalating your privileges. Pretty easy to do that. And a lot of systems programmers or whatever would know how to do that. And we certainly have found those in multiple systems.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm curious. Obviously, part of your day job is actually performing penetration tests and, you know, trying to act and think like a bad guy and see if you can get into somebody's mainframe. When you're out there, do you often have somebody who works in either operations or security coming and saying, hey, what are you doing? I saw you pop up over here or over there. I mean, does that happen very often, or is it generally happen too late in the cycle at a point where, you know, you could have effectively, if you were a bad guy, have taken over control?
That's a great, great question. Because, you know, a lot of people maybe don't think about that. One of the reasons we pen test is obviously to find vulnerabilities in the systems, misconfigurations, missing patches, other, you know, backdoor, like I've been talking about, those kinds of things. Another reason, though, we do this is to test out the responses. So sometimes if it's more of a red team exercise or even just during a pen test, like we may do it where the SOC, for instance, doesn't know we're doing it intentionally, because we want to know what they, you know, what are they able to detect. And honestly, of all the times I've done this, only once have I had somebody come crashing through the door and tell me that they saw something that I did and that sort of thing. And even then, it was because I had moved past the period where I was trying to be very stealthy to being very loud. So it's the equivalent of, like, being a cat burglar and tiptoeing around the house to when you realize nobody's home and you just start flipping on lights and turn on the radio and checking out the fridge to see what there is to eat while you steal things. And then they actually came out and said something about that, which was better than nothing, right? But most of the time, funnily enough, the way we get noticed is just because we might be running a job that's sort of searching data sets for passwords or crypto keys or things like that. And those are kind of brute force things you do. And sometimes they take up CPU. And so often we'll get, if we get outed, we get outed by operations who's called us in the past and said, hey, that job you're running is taking a lot of CPU. Is it okay if I knock down the priority a little bit? And we're just like, yeah, sure, that's fine. But they're not really asking, like, what are you doing? They're more just concerned that you're taking up, you know, precious CPU cycles, which interestingly enough, there have been, and I can't name names, but there have been very high profile breaches where they weren't mainframe breaches, but the mainframe was delivering the data behind the scenes. So imagine like a website, you know, getting breached and people figuring out how to query databases to get dump data from some company where the mainframe is the backend database on that. So it's not a mainframe breach, but that's where the data's come from. And the way that they actually found the breach was because of the number of CPU cycles and the number of jobs being spawned on the mainframe. So it's a poor detector, but it's one of the things that mainframe operation shops are conditioned to look at because historically, you know, that's how you keep a good, a smooth running shop is by making sure you don't overuse your CPU or have too many jobs running at the same time, or you're not, running up the credit card on the system. Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And I wonder, when you perform those tests, I think some people think that you're starting from, basically a high ground position where you've already got, mostly what you need to compromise, and of course you'd be able to do it. But, is it something where you start from a point where you've got some level of access that you're able to leverage, or is it more of an uphill battle when you do a penetration test?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We made the decision a long time ago that we focus strictly on the mainframe, and so what we don't do is hack your network or your Active Directory or you fish your emails to try to get credentials, because there are a tremendous number of companies out there that do that sort of thing and do it very well. We don't need to reproduce that. And so what we generally do is one or two things. More commonly, we go in and say, look, we need you to just start us with a set of credentials. We're going to do uncredentialed and credentialed pen test. And the assumption there is that we're coming from the perspective of someone or some machine on your network who's already been compromised, who already has a set of credentials. And occasionally I get pushback on that and saying, well, if you're asking for credentials, then you've already made it easy. And I said, well, listen, you don't have to talk to too many people that do network pen testing to get them to tell you that getting credentials is not the hard part, right? Phishing someone or, dumping credentials from Active Directory is not the difficult part of it, right? The part of it then is escalating your privileges and figuring out where the data is and that kind of stuff. And so what we're really testing are the controls on the mainframe. We do test non-credentialed controls as well. So we attack the network surfaces and servers and things like that. But we also want to be able to get access to the system because there's so many people that have access to that system, and make sure that we're not able to do anything on there. So the credentials we ask for are low level credentials. They shouldn't have any special privileges. They should have no security privileges, just the ability to write some JCL and submit a job and that kind of stuff, but they shouldn't have anything. And our goal is to see, how many different ways can we escalate those privileges? And then once we have done that, and then we go and we check a bunch of other stuff and dump data and all those kinds of things. But the other way we go about this sometimes is we will partner with a firm that specializes in like network pen testing, Windows network pen testing. And then when we go into the client, we say, okay, you don't have to give us any IDs or anything. We'll let our friends over here from this company, this networking company, let them do their work first. And when they start generating IDs and cracking passwords, then we'll start testing those on the mainframe until we get a hit and go from there, which is, a little more real world, but then that requires us to have them to have multiple people in to come and do those those kinds of exercises. But that's that last example is a very good reason, if you're paying attention, why you shouldn't synchronize passwords between the mainframe and your Windows domains, right? There's no good reason to synchronize those passwords, because if you compromise one system, be it the mainframe or be it a Windows system, then you get access to the other one. There's no good reason to do that anymore.
Yeah, and the reality is it really wouldn't be that hard to fish somebody to get those credentials anyway. I mean, you think of the recent Twitter event with the high profile celebrities getting their accounts hacked, and it all started with a 17-year-old calling in pretending to be IT. So,
absolutely.
Yep. It's not impossible for you to actually start from that if you wanted to take on that mantle and actually try to fish somebody. But, it kind of dilutes the argument even further of it's absolutely happening anyway with people just handing over their credentials. So
that's right.
That human element is always going to be there.
That's right. It's right. That's exactly right. And so we want to spend our time and the money that you're giving us on the things that we are experts at. When you want to do, when you want to do something that isn't mainframe specific, then bring in an expert in that field and let us spend our time on focusing on that platform.
So what kind of scares you the most about the state of mainframe security in the market right now? We've talked about how easy it is to actually phish somebody, get them to hand over their credentials. Does that human element, of being targeted, and like you said, the example of where maybe somebody is synchronizing those credentials, is that the scarier piece, or is it just the overall attitude towards maybe complacency and actually securing the mainframe?
Yeah, it's that human element scares me, but that's not mainframes. That's not unique to the mainframe. Right? I have very dear friends who do social engineering for a living, and they will tell me that if they're targeting an individual or a couple of individuals on a team, it's just a matter of time. They will get you, right? They will get you. Nobody's impervious to eventually, clicking the wrong link or answering the wrong phone call and giving the wrong information or opening the wrong attachment. Like, they eventually will get you. And so that scares me, but like I said, that's not really mainframe specific. What scares me about the mainframe is just this, there's all these controls out there, right? The platform has all these controls out there. And what I mean by that is it has all these features and abilities to be made to be very, very secure, dang near impenetrable. I say that with air quotes because there's really nothing that's impenetrable, but it has the ability to be very, very, very secure, such that I would drop it on a very hostile network like the internet and not worry about it at all. I mean, it's just really, you can really lock it down. And what scares me the most is just the gap between the clients that we see on a daily basis and that goal. I mean, they're so far behind. If you remember, Grant, back, in the early days of worms and viruses and hacking and stuff, where we had like SQL Slammer and Melissa and all those things. I mean, those were all, a lot of those were propagated based on the fact that we had these systems that were exposed to the internet, where they had ports like file sharing and SQL servers, queries, ports and stuff that were exposed to the internet, which never should be, right? And now, we don't do that anymore, but also those systems tend to be hardened to the point where even if you did, they might be okay, right? They might be all right, because we've gone through all these cycles of hacking, finding bugs, patching, fixing, getting completely owned, going over and over again. And so the nature of these systems is that the people are using those features, right? People are using the full disk encryption. They're using the ingress and egress firewalls. They're using all the behavioral stuff that they can use and that kind of stuff. And so that they're really making the most of like the Windows servers and all of its newest features, such that now when bugs are found, it's either because there's been some deliberate negligence in configuring it, or it's literally like a brand new zero-day code bug kind of thing. The problem with where we're at in the mainframe, by contrast, is that we're not implementing all those safeguards yet. They're all there, but we're not turning them on. For the reasons we talked about last time, we're not turning them on. We're not configuring them as we've got so much work just to get caught up before it becomes hitting starting to hit those edge cases with, you know, I used to get asked when several years ago when Heartbleed and, what were the CPU based bugs? My brain just stopped for a minute, but a couple of years ago when we had those, the basic, bugs that were strictly CPU based, they affected a whole bunch of different CPU architectures, and they allowed you to, dump data and pull data out of memory and this kind of stuff with speculative execution hacks. Those things were possible to do on the mainframe as well. And we had all kinds of people panicking and asking us about, you know, oh, do I need to be worried about, do I need to be worried about this and that, these new kind of breaches that came out? I was like, listen, these new vulnerabilities. And I was like, listen, they might work on your system, but the fact of the matter is there's a million different ways that are easier to own you. Like, you have to be able to run code on your system to get those, to get Meltdown Inspector, that's what they're called, to work. But realistically, it's kind of like you're worried about the sophisticated security system breach or something like that, but you're leaving your windows and your front door unlocked and the key under the mat, you know? So we've got so much work to get there before we have to worry about those more sophisticated types of things. And that's what scares me the most.
Gotcha. So kind of reading between the lines of what, you know, you've listed some of the concerns in the current landscape. What would you say is kind of the biggest opportunity for an attacker when it comes to a mainframe right now? Is it that kind of indifference that they've got some things that may help that they're just not actively taking on? Or is it just even maybe overconfidence that it's not really a threat? Other things are really a bigger target. So, you know, we feel like it's probably secure enough behind the perimeter.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of indifference and overconfidence, and maybe a distant third or a slight third would be the attitude like, well, we know it's a problem, but we've got bigger fish to fry, which isn't, you know, not really indifferent to the system or not really confident that it's secure, but we feel like we're more likely to get, you know, attacked and breached here in these other domains. And I get that one. That one, there's a, you know, corporations only have a finite amount of money to spend, right? And they're going to put it towards the thing they think is the biggest risk. It's a nonstop decision on their part about which risks to mitigate, and which ones to just accept. The but that I would throw out there is that the difference between getting a web server owned and a database dumped or something like that is maybe some, you know, humiliation in the papers and some fines and some angry customers and maybe a little lost revenue. But if you look back over the years, a lot of those companies, mostly all of those big companies who've been targeted breaches that have had data dumped, so they're all still doing business. And you know, people are generally have short-term memories on a lot of that stuff. The difference with the mainframe is it's a little bit more like having a heart attack, right? I mean, if you're a large organization, I liken that to maybe, you know, the cardiovascular surgeon who runs 10 miles every day and lives near the hospital having a heart attack. Like, there's a pretty good chance that that person might get to have a second one, right? They might live through the first one because they're in such good shape and they know the right people and they live in the right place and they're lucky and, you know, they might be all right. Versus the person that lives out in the middle of the woods, 3 hours away from anywhere and just has bacon all day long kind of thing. If you're a mid-sized company, you maybe don't have the resources to recover from something like that. I mean, we've seen it time and again with like ransomware, right? Where they end up paying the ransom because they just don't have the tech discipline to recover from something like that. And my concern would be that the mainframe being attacked or ransomware or something like that is such a risk in terms of them not being able to do business again, because if somebody goes in and scrambles their data or deletes data or something like that, that they really can't afford to dismiss it entirely. And so what I'd say is, look, you know, whether you're indifferent or overconfident or whether you just can't prioritize it, you need to do something either just to make sure you've covered your back end in terms of the court of public opinion, you know, when the details of the hack comes out in the wash, that you can at least say, well, we tried, versus now we didn't look at that system because we didn't think it was a priority. But all the way up into, you know, actually getting it locked down so that an opportunistic attacker just moves on to the next person, right? Because that's the end of the day, that's what you're really trying to protect yourself from is those attackers who are casting a wide net. And your bank is pretty well locked down, but the one across the street isn't. And, you know, so they move over there. I mean, that's in a lot of cases, that's the best you can hope for. And they're not there yet.
Great. Yeah. No, a lot of good food for thought there. Well, with that, I think that's our time for today. So thanks again, Chad. Appreciate, as always, your perspective on this and, you know, kind of giving us the lay of the land from somebody who's out there and seeing these things in the real world. So with that, I will turn it back over to Jill.
Awesome. Thank you, Grant. And a very special thanks to Chad for joining us again today. This was really fantastic stuff. For those that want to learn more about what you can do to make your mainframe more secure, please visit bmc.com/Amy-security. And Amy is spelled A-M-I. Again, that's bmc.com/Amy-security. And to our listeners today, thank you for joining us and stay tuned for more great episodes coming soon. But that is it for now. Thanks for listening to the BMC Amy Z Talk podcast. Have a wonderful day.
The BMC Amy Z Talk and Caffeeware Modern Mainframe podcasts have joined forces. You can find your favorite episodes from both podcasts, as well as new insight and discussion at soundcloud.com/modernmainframe.